flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
The last day of January has arrived. On this day, 38 years ago, 35 points in 18 plays. The all-time Super Bowl quarter. Good morning. On the show today, Ben Standing at noon, but before that, Santana Moss will join us at 11:15. This from Stan. Stan writes, Kevin, Steve Buckhantz, the biggest surprise guest ever on your show. When you said you were having him on to talk about the plane crash, I thought you had overstepped with an attempt at dark wizard's humor. Oh, Stan. He's the best guest I've ever heard on the station. I was shocked. Yeah, Buck was really, really good yesterday. For those that missed it, I would urge you to go back and listen to it at theteam980.com or by downloading the Odyssey app. Buck is, as one person said, somebody said, you described him as an aviation expert. He is not only an aviation expert, he's an aviation enthusiast. Yeah, he's both of those things, and that's why I had him on, because Buck is a pilot. He knows so much about aviation, especially in this area. He knows the airports very, very well, and he was really, really good at discussing, you know, the complexity around Reagan National, what the rules are, the restricted airspace, the helicopters, everything. He was so great. And then in talking about, you know, the different possibilities of what could have happened in that very tragic incident. There's new video on it. I've seen the new video. God, it's so horrific. But Stan, you were not the only person to write me. I was inundated with so many mentions on Twitter, so many emails about how much you guys really appreciated Buck and his knowledge. Buck is one of the all-time great play-by-play guys in the history of our town. I mean, still, all due respect to the people who have followed, criminal that they ousted Phil and Buck for some sort of younger audience. I mean, how about just focus on winning? And Buck is actually just so much more interested in other things than basketball, the NBA and Wizards. And one of the things that he's very interested in is aviation, and he's been a pilot since he was in a very young guy, going back into the 70s. Yeah, all of you that reached out, he was great. And again, Denton, don't you think? Even Denton, when we got done, said, oh my God, I had no idea. Yeah. Those of us that have known Buck forever have known it. I mean, we had Naki on right afterwards. And Naki said, like you, I was texting Buck when this thing went down. Buck probably had at least, you know, dozens of people who know that he knows exactly what he's looking at and what the possibilities were in terms of why and the airport itself. And yeah, I love Buck, and he was really, really good yesterday. Thank you, Stan, and everybody else that reached out to say that you appreciated that. And again, the team980.com, just go to yesterday's show and the first segment, the 10 a.m. hour. We had Buck on. What time did he come on? Like 10:15, right, Denton?
Something yeah, 10:15.
Like yeah. And then he was on with us the rest of the hour. All right. So 38 years ago, I just went back to look at this because it is pretty amazing. In an era, by the way, where throwing the football was a big deal, but not like it would become. Washington, in the second quarter against Denver, ran 18 offensive plays and scored 5 touchdowns. None of them were special teams set up. None of them were turnover scores. Doug Williams, in the second quarter, Denton, 9 of 11 for 228 yards and 4 touchdowns in a quarter. The team had 5 drives in the second quarter, scored 5 touchdowns, and generated the most yards they could have, based on starting field position, 277 yards in a quarter. The other touchdown came on a 58-yard run by Timmy Smith. They finished the game with 602 yards of offense, 42 points. I mean, they could have scored 80, but they took their foot off the pedal because they had a 42-10 lead, 35-10, and Denver had no prospect of coming back into the game unless Washington started to get fancy and tricky and allowed them back into the game. Doug finished the game 18 of 29 for 340 yards and 4 touchdowns. How about 18 completions for 340 yards and 4 touchdowns? Timmy Smith in the game, 204 yards rushing on just 22 carries. He had 2 touchdowns and the 204 yards that Timmy Smith ran for in Super Bowl 22 are still a record. Those yards, that game, still the all-time Super Bowl rushing mark. You know, on a related note, but not game-specific, and I don't think I've talked about this at all this year, but I have really enjoyed, and I know many of you have as well, the way this new organization has embraced Doug Williams. Doug Williams is one of the nicest men any one of you have ever met or will meet at any point. And there have been times over the years in which I don't know that Doug was, he was embraced, he was a part of it, but not always in the way in which Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and Josh Harris and this group have embraced Doug Williams. He's a legend. For the franchise, he's a legend in this town. And the game he had, and look, that wasn't the only game, but it's the game that he'll forever be known for. You know, over the years, there have been conversations that have popped up from fans that maybe are younger, and they're like, why isn't Doug Williams in the Hall of Fame? Doug Williams did not have a Hall of Fame career. He had some very good years. This is not to diminish his career. He had a very good year. He started 5 years in Tampa. He essentially resurrected that franchise. You know, the franchise came into being in 1976. He was their first-round pick in the 1978 draft. He was their first-round pick, 17th overall. And the first season, he started 10 games. The team went... get close to the postseason. In his second year, the team won the division, went 10-6, and they were in the postseason, and they got to the NFC Championship game. In Doug's second year as a starter in Tampa Bay, the team had been an expansion team in 1976, and by the way, went 0-16 in 76. They were terrible in 77. They improved a little bit in 78. And then in 79, they went 10-6. They beat Philadelphia in the divisional round, and then they lost in the NFC Championship game, actually, by the final score of 9-0. The Rams beat them 9-0. The Rams were very good defensively. They went on as a surprise entrant into the Super Bowl under Ray Malavasi. That was the Rams team quarterbacked by Vince Ferragamo. Doug got hurt in the NFC title game and came out of that game. And that really hurt the Buccaneers' chances. But Doug had a good career. He just didn't have anything resembling a Hall of Fame career. Not even close, actually. He threw for 17,000 yards, 100 touchdowns, 93 interceptions. His record as a starting quarterback was 38-42-1. As a playoff quarterback in 4 years, he went to the playoffs three times with Tampa. He was 4-3 as a starting quarterback, and of course had a game for the ages, in Super Bowl 22. But, you know, towards the end of that year, Doug had some really good games. He came in off the bench for Jay Schrader in the season finale at Minnesota, and that was led Washington back to a win, and Gibbs went with Doug in the postseason. Doug was really solid in the win over Chicago, where they upset the Bears. That was the Daryl Green punt return game. He was fine in the Minnesota game. Statistically, he doesn't look great, but he threw two touchdowns and no picks. And then he had, you know, one of the all-time great quarterbacked Super Bowl games. 18 of 29, 340, four touchdowns. What Doug was as a quarterback was he was a gunslinger. Doug could throw the deep ball as well as anybody in the league could throw the deep ball. And he had, you know, weapons. He had Kelvin Bryant in the backfield, eventually Timmy Smith in the postseason. Timmy Smith was not a big part of the regular season. He had, you know, Ricky Sanders, Art Monk, Gary Clark. He had big-time receivers. And of course, Doug would come back for a few more years in Washington and not have the success. And there were some injuries, and then there was some quarterback controversies, etc. But Doug will go down as a beloved all-time legendary Redskin. And 38 years ago was the game that made his legend. That's a hell of a game for a Super Bowl and a hell of a quarter. I'll never forget it because they were down 10-0 and it was like, ugh, this does not look good. Doug got hurt, you know, started to come out. Jay Schrader came in for a play. He came right back in. But man, Washington, that was one of those games, Denton, when they say about the playoffs, you got to run the football. You got to stop the run. You got to win in the trenches. They won everywhere in that Super Bowl, but when you end up with 602 yards of offense and you have the explosion through the air, but they could not stop the run. Could not stop the run to save their life. And the only player on their team that could run was Elway, essentially, the quarterback. That was the second of the three Lombardi trophies that this franchise has. All right. The Wizards lost again last night. That makes it 16 games in a row that they have lost, tying the franchise record, matching the 16 that they've already lost in the last 365 days. They are putting together, quite honestly, one of the worst seasons in the history of this town. And I'm going to go through some of those seasons when we come back. Keep in mind, though, this is what they're trying to do. I'm fine with it. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the Team980.com.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Wizards lost again. That's 16 straight losses for the Washington Wizards. They lost to the Lakers last night. You just mentioned something to me that I don't think I knew about the game. Tell me.
Career high. Bronny James, our boy, 5 points. He'd only scored 4 the entire season entering last night. It's a great defense for the Wizards.
That's his best game as a pro?
Well, he had scored 4 points in the NBA.
I thought he was playing in the G League. No?
He has the two-way deal, the two-way bit. So they bring him up for games that they think he's going to play. He played.
Well, they were right to think he would play in this game. The Wizards, by the way, became the 5th team to lose at least 16 straight games on multiple occasions according to Sport Radar. That's their 16th straight loss. They are now 6-41 on the season. They were down 42-29 at the end of the first quarter. They were down 78-45 at halftime. These games are so over so quickly. Didn't the Mavericks have a 42-16 lead the other night at the end of the first quarter? I think they did. We're watching right now potentially the worst regular season in NBA history. So the worst regular season in NBA history is the Philadelphia 76ers, who won 10 games back in, hold on, I had it here a second ago. Why did I pull that down? The worst NBA regular seasons. 1973 76ers were 9-73, all right, in an 82-game schedule. That's the worst record in the history of NBA basketball. The 76ers in 2016, those would be the Josh Harris process 76ers, were 10-72. Washington at 6-41 right now are on pace to win 10.46 games. So they are just barely ahead of the 2016 76ers, and a little bit more comfortably ahead. Average, you know, their current winning percentage extrapolated out over 82 games ahead of the 73-76ers. But that doesn't mean they won't get there. I mean, a couple more losses for the Wizards coming up. And right now, their schedule, you know, their next game's against the Timberwolves, as an example. Then they go from the Timberwolves. They play Charlotte, Brooklyn, but then they've got Cleveland. So they've got, you know, look, every game for them is going to be a game in which they're an underdog in. But the rest of the way, they still play Boston a couple times, still play Detroit a couple of times, still play some other good teams in the NBA. They've got a shot. They got a shot to pull off the worst season in NBA history. Again, let me just emphasize this. This is much better than, you know, Ted saying we'll never tank and doing it that way, because that didn't generate anything positive in terms of being a good team, being a contender. You know, there were a couple of teams that I got into probably overzealous getting into some of those Wall, Beal, Gortat, Nene, Ariza, Paul Pierce, etc. teams. They were close to getting to an Eastern Conference Finals. They were in a 7th and deciding game in 2017 in Boston. That was fun. That was exciting. I was into it. There's no doubt. And I probably thought that they were headed for, you know, kind of contention and being in the mix in the Eastern Conference for years to come. That did not work out. Injuries, et cetera. They're doing the right thing right now. Now, they're kind of going overboard in the fact that they're not even close to competitive. None of these games are close. The average margin of loss is outrageous for the Wizards right now. Where are they right now? -15.2. That's an unbelievable average margin of loss. They're not right now. -15.2, just to give you an idea, is the worst in the league, of course. The second worst is New Orleans at -8.5. They're almost double the average loss margin from the team in front of them at 29th. I think the 15.2 margin of loss is a point behind the all-time mark. I think there's, if you look this up, Denton, because I think we looked this up last week, I think it's like 16-something is the record all-time for average margin of loss in NBA history. But, man, they are one bad basketball team right now. I mean, 16 straight losses from November 2nd through December 5th, and now 16 straight losses from January 3rd to January 30th. And there's a pretty good chance on Saturday night in Minnesota it'll be 17 straight. And that would be, Denton, right, the all-time franchise mark.
That would. It would be their second chance to break it this year, but that would break it.
Yeah, I mean, they would certainly have another chance to break it if they were to somehow pull off a shocker at Minnesota. Because at that point, they've still got 24 more games, right? 34 more games. What am I talking about? 34 more games. Anyway, really bad team. This right now is one of the worst teams we've ever had among our four professional teams all time. Now, the all-time worst team, and I think it's not debatable because it's the worst season in the history of the National Hockey League. Now, there's a reason for it. The 74-75 Capitals were an expansion team, and they played like it. They went 8-67-5. That is the worst 82-game NHL season of all time. The Wizards could join them this year if they can go on, you know, a couple of other big losing streaks and not get to, the Philadelphia mark. And they got a chance. I mean, it's almost like you're kind of rooting for them to make history here. They're guaranteed at this point, barring, you know, the absolute unforeseen, which is not going to happen, to end up in the bottom three teams in the league, which is, you know, good for the best odds for the draft lottery. You know, the bottom three teams will have a 14% chance. Right now, they're 6-41 mark. Is easily the worst in the league. Utah's 10-36. And then you've got two 12-win teams in the Hornets and the Pelicans. I mean, I think the Hornets and the Pelicans have already won, you know, too many games for the Wizards to pass. They're not going to win six more likely than not. So they are pretty much a lock for the bottom three. And again, I'm all for this. I'm all for this tanking. I'm all for playing all these young players, drafting all these young players, and trying to find the players that could be a part of a contending team, you know, when some of you that have hair don't have hair anymore. Some of you that have hair have gray hair. It's going to be 4, 5, 6 years before this pays off, if it pays off. But this is the only way to do it. It's the only chance you have, is to keep drafting players and hit on a top five player in the league and a couple of others that end up being really good two, a really good three. And maybe by the time we get to 2028, 2029, and the new football stadium is getting near to opening, hopefully at the RFK site, the Wizards are a contender. That would be great. Watch Cooper Flagg. He's pretty good. They're going to have a chance at him. Watch Ace Bailey for Rutgers. He's pretty good. They may have a chance at him. The worst Nats season for, in terms of, you know, a true full season of baseball, 162 games, is nowhere near the worst in Major League Baseball history. So the Nats have had a couple of bad seasons, including 2022 when they won just 55 games. You know, when they arrived in town, remember their first year, they went 81-81. And then, you know, 08-09, before they got on their run, they won 59 games in consecutive years. But none of those are anywhere near the worst seasons of all time. Interestingly, the old Washington Senators, who were here in multiple iterations because they moved to Minneapolis in 61, then we got an expansion team, the Senators. The 1904 Senators went 38-113. That winning percentage is the fourth worst ever in Major League Baseball history. Of course, we don't remember any of this. The 1909 Senators also are in the top 10 of worst MLB seasons. But nothing the Senators or the Nationals have done rivals what the Caps have done or what the Wizards are currently doing. Now, in terms of our football team, you know, I said about the season last year that in my lifetime, I think last year may have been the worst team and the worst season I've ever seen. You know, it wasn't the, you know, fewest amount of wins because they had had three win seasons before. They were 4-13 last year. But in terms of just the overall point differential of minus 189, it was, you know, it was the worst, certainly in a 17-game schedule. And it was close to what the 2019 team was at 3-13. And a lot of people will point back to the 1961 team that went 1-12-1, which was really, you know, the standard for awful. They were 1-12-1 under McPeak, the coach at the time, and they were a dreadful team. You know, some of the longtime historians of the team that remember that or have studied that will say that's the worst Redskins team of all time. You know, I personally think the team that I watched last year and the way they lost games, it was bad. But nothing the Redskins have ever done in a season really rivals what the Wizards are doing now or what the Caps did in their expansion year. I think in terms of just looking at the four majors and taking into consideration the Caps season was an expansion team season, we are witnessing right now the worst season in DC sports history. These Wizards are a special kind of awful. Nothing the Nats have done. The Senators, you got to go back to the early 1900s. The Caps, you got to go back to an expansion season. The Redskins 61 season was horrific. You know, last year was really bad. 2019 wasn't pleasant to watch, but it really doesn't rival this. You know, none of those seasons ended up with Washington being the worst team in the league, even, let alone one of the worst teams of all time. This is really bad. I wish I were paying attention to it more to tell you why it's so bad, but I'm not. You know, I've talked to a few people. Ben Standing still watches every single game. You know, I think he doesn't love the fact that all the young guys seem to be playing at the same time rather than, you know, bringing some guys off the bench and having the team be a bit more competitive when the young guys are in. But they're about probably on the verge to trading some of their veteran players, Poole, Kuzma, etc. I mean, I'm assuming we're going to get a trade with the Wizards coming up here before the trade deadline that hopefully will bring back more opportunities draft-wise or a young prospect, but I'm sure it'll be draft choices. But this is, Denton, this is the worst. This is the worst DC sports season ever. I don't know, man. This, it's not just the record, it's the margin of loss. This team during this 16-game schedule, the closest game they played, and it by far was the closest game they played, was a 6-point loss to Philadelphia back on January 8th. They lost by 38 last night. They lost by 24 the night before. They lost by 22 the night before that. At Phoenix, they only lost by 10. They lost by 17 in L.A. to the Clippers. They lost by 23 to the Lakers. They lost by 23 to Sacramento. They only lost by 8 at Golden State. 7 against Phoenix. Man, keep playing Phoenix. Those are their close games. Of course, you only play them twice a year. So that's it. But the Lakers were in town, and people were cheering for Bronny to get in the game and set his all-time scoring mark of 5 points. He was 1-for-6 in the game, but good for him. LeBron, 24 points, 27 minutes. The Wizards lose 134-96.
Did you ever think that – let me turn the clock back here for you. Let's just say it's 2009, and you're watching the Andre Blatch-led Wizards – And you're like, surely it's never going to get this low again.
That team was really bad. Was that the team that won 19 games?
That was 08-09 when they still had Twan and Karan on that roster, but they had traded them at the end of the year. And then 09-10 was when Andre Blatch was the best player on the team. And you're like,
Was that Flip's first year or Eddie Jordan's last year?
That was Flip's first year. It was. I think that, that roster, let me pull it up. It was like Blatch, Nick Young.
Oh.
Gilbert was there for a little bit.
They traded. They had like Randy Foy on the team. They had made that trade. Mike Miller was on the team. Right? Is that the team?
Yeah, Twan and Karan were traded that year. So they played half the year. And then you have Andre Blatch. You had Mike Miller for 54 games. Remember Al Thornton? He was on that team. Yeah, Brendan Haywood was on that team. 26 games of Sean Livingston before he resurrected his career. You had Alonzo G. on the team. Who remembers Earl Boykins? He was like 5'6". Yeah.
Was Brendan on that team?
Brendan was on that team. JaVale McGee was on that team. James Singleton.
McGee was one of the all-time talents, but apparently, I mean, look, the maturity level of those teams and the dysfunction of those Wizards, they rivaled the Skins' dysfunction.
Gilbert's they might bringing have been more.
Gilbert's, you know, the whole thing was just out of control. Who else am I missing from that team?
So we had Cartier-Martin on that team. I actually like Cartier-Martin for a little bit. That's how bad things were. Deshaun Stevenson was on that team for 40 games.
I actually always kind of liked Deshaun Stevenson. He had some big games for them.
He was a badass competitor.
Like kind of off the bench.
He was a badass competitor. He also shot 17% from three that year.
Okay.
Who else is on this team? You mentioned Randy Foy, Mike Miller. Josh Howard was on the team for four games.
Oh, the Wake Forest Josh Howard.
Yeah, the one that played really well in Dallas, that playoff run in 06.
Oh, he played really well in Dallas. He was a hell of a defender.
I thought he was going to be something here.
Josh Howard, when he played at Wake, I was like, this dude is a killer and he is a defender. How many years did he play in Washington? It wasn't a lot.
I think it was like two. Maybe one and a half, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember a lot of Josh Howard here. I do remember him being on the roster, but I certainly remember him in Dallas
during
some of those years. I'm sorry?
I think he's a coach now.
Is he?
Yeah, I think he coaches in in one of like the lower level leagues. But he was in Washington he was traded in February of 2010, and then he was gone in December of 2011.
Yeah. Well, look, that obviously led to the drafting of one John Wall, you know, and the idea of, and by the way, like that was not a controversial pick. John Wall was the clear number one in that pick. And then, you know, we started to see the build. And look, I've said this many times. I think that the best coached Wizards team, Wizards teams were the Randy Whitman teams. I thought they were the most disciplined. I thought they were the toughest. I thought they were the best coached. And when they got into that run of going to the postseason and they won, you know, back-to-back series, like they hadn't won a series since 2005 when they won against the Bulls in the 2014 postseason, right? 2014, that was the first year. And then they lost to the Pacers in a series, by the way, in which they won game one of that series. It went to six. And then you go to the next year in which they swept Toronto in the first round of the postseason. And then they had that very good series with the Hawks in which John got hurt. And I think they would have won that series had John not gotten hurt and would have advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals that year. And then, you know, Scott Brooks comes in. Look, Scott was a super nice guy and definitely more of a player's coach. He was not the X's and O's coach that Randy Whitman was. Not even close. And they had a couple of good years. Like, it was Brooks' first year that they made it to the Celtics series, right? That was his first year where they almost won 50. They won 49. They didn't get to 50. Was that Brooks' first year or second year? Hold on.
That was Scott Brooks'.
You're not helping me here.
No, that was Scott Brooks' first year. Yeah, that was first year they won 49 because they started awful that year. And then they turned it around. They went 49-33. The next year was 43-39.
Yeah. Yeah, that season, I mean, I got carried away. There is no doubt I got way carried away. This is the team in town other than the Skins and Terps Hoops that I've always had incredible passion for. The lack of passion this year is for friends of mine, they're like, you know, did you see last night? No, I haven't watched anything. I barely have paid attention. But I'm totally in favor of what they're doing. But that series when they beat the Hawks and John Wall had one of the great playoff games in franchise history, the game six on the road, he had 42. I'm going to pull up the box.
I think it was like 42 and 17, right? I mean, the guy was on – he was completely on one.
He scored – it was something like – 17 of their final 19 points to put essentially the series on ice and to clinch the series. 42 points, 8 assists, 4 steals in the game, 2 block shots in the game.
He shot 64% from the field in that game.
He was so good in that game. And then in the 7th game against Boston, he went ice cold. You know, that was a killer in the 7th game against Boston. Remember, he had a terrible game after forcing Game 7 at the end of Game 6. Beal was the one that went off in Game 7.
But I'm forgetting how many points he had. The bench scored like 5 points that game.
What did Beal have? He had 30-something in
that
game.
Yeah, Beal had 38 on 12 of 22. But the bench, it was literally Bogdanović who had 5, and that was it. Like, Mahimi played 11 minutes. Oubre couldn't do anything. Brandon Jennings. I forgot he was on the team. He played 6 minutes. Yeah, I mean, they had Wall playing 44
Bogdanović
minutes.
Bogdanović was huge in that series, though, if I recall, but not in Game 7.
I'm looking at the numbers for that Atlanta series as a whole. John Wall averaged nearly 30-10. He was 29.5-10.
He was awesome in that series. Awesome in that series. I've said this before about that game six. It's one. I think Elvin Hayes probably had the greatest Wizards Bullets playoff game. It was game 7 against the Atlanta Hawks. He went for 35-19 and like had 6 block shots, something like that, in the game. It was an outrageous performance. 39 points in the game. It was an outrageous performance. He strapped the team to his back. They won game 7. They were the defending champions that year. Bobby Dandridge had one of the great all-time game 7s in franchise history. That was the 79 Eastern Conference Finals game against San Antonio. But Wall's 42 in game 6 against the Hawks, wow, that was a game. And like you said, that was a series. When John Wall was healthy, look, there was a lot that he didn't do. There was a lot that wasn't necessarily conducive to great playoff basketball. In the same way that Westbrook hasn't ever kind of been able to slow it down enough, John had some of those issues, although I think he was better in some of those spots as he grew older. But, you know, whatever. What are we doing here?
No, we're talking about the good old days.
But they weren't even good old days. I was trying to make them out to be good old days because I was just excited that people actually were watching the games and they cared a little bit. But that was it.
They were good old days for my generation.
2017 was it. What'd you say?
They were good old days for my generation because we never had anything that resembled a championship. So getting to the second round in that series with Boston and the way they beat Atlanta after 2 years prior, Schroeder had been posting some stuff on social media when they lost, when John Wall broke his hand, because John Wall, they would have won if John Wall didn't break his hand that year.
Oh, no doubt. They would have won that series if Wall doesn't break his hand. I think one of my favorites, their first series against Chicago when they were finally back into the postseason was a really fun series to watch. You know who called almost every game in that series for TNT? Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr was working as a game analyst, and I remember going, man, he's good. He is so good as a basketball analyst, and it probably was the next season that he took over at Golden State. I'm positive that my memory of that is correct. If you tell me that his first season in Golden State was 2013-2014, then I'm thinking about something else. But I'm pretty sure that he called almost every game of that Bulls series, and the Wizards won that series in five games. Nene was incredible in those games. He was always such a high IQ player. I remember Kerr. They went in and they took, what'd you say?
That was because Kerr started in 14-15 in Golden State.
Yeah, good. I was going to say, man, if I was thinking of somebody else and not Steve Kerr. Yeah, Kerr was awesome as a broadcaster. He really was. And he basically called, like, I think of those five games, I think he called three or four of them, it seemed like. And he was just so good in the nuance and understood who really was key. Because remember, that's Wall and Beal at the beginning. That's their first playoff series together. And I bought in. I thought this is going to be the first of many years in a row. They're gonna start going to the playoffs every year. This is going to be a 10-year run, playoffs every year, and they just have to find, you know, a third big-time player, and maybe if, you know, LeBron leaves the East, they can get to an NBA Finals, you know, because that team had Trevor Ariza and Nene and Gortat on the team. You want to talk about three super high IQ players with a high IQ coach. They were really, really sharp as a team, smart as a team. They just didn't have enough in the next round against that Indiana team. But they were in that series, man. They were in that series against the Pacers. Okay. We're done talking about them. We'll do some Denton news when we come back. Santana Moss is going to join us at 11:15. I want to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, but specifically the Eagles and something that Jason Kelce said about Jalen Hurts. You'll hear that next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app. Are you ready to win big and live it up in Sin City? It's the slam dunk in Las Vegas on the Team 980. Listen for your chance to win a flyaway trip to Las Vegas with three friends and $20,000 for spending money for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen to the Team 980 for a chance to win the experience of a lifetime. Listen each day for an hour to earn your daily entry. This is a national contest. More details available at odyssey.com/slam dunk. That would be slam dunk. odyssey.com/slam dunk. All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, so we talked about the Wizards. They got crushed 134-96 against the Lakers. NBA All-Star rosters announced yesterday, Kevin. Shockingly, no Jordan Poole. He did not make the roster.
He didn't.
More shockingly, in the way that's like actually shocking, LaMelo Ball was left off the roster as well, despite the fact that he led in fan voting for Eastern Conference guards and is also averaging like 28 points for the Charlotte, whatever they are now, Hornets. I can't believe he was left off there. I think that's a swing and a miss by the NBA.
Who else were big omissions? You always get that list. Who else didn't?
Trey Young and Domantas Sabonis were the other. Those were like the three that everyone was kind of scratching their head at. But LaMelo
Ball.
What
about Maxey? Did he make the All-Star team or not?
Tyrese Maxey did not make the All-Star team.
What about Norman Powell with the Clippers? That dude's having a season.
He did not. James Harden did, though.
Okay. Harden's having a good season. Harden is really having a season in which he has really become such a great distributor of the ball. That team's always interesting.
I mean, if you're not watching the NBA, like, these All-Star rosters are going to
stun you. Oh, I'm not watching it closely enough to know. I think I've told you this before. I look at Denver's box score. I look at the Wizards' box score. I look at Denver's, and I look at the Clippers. Why? Because Kawhi Leonard's my favorite player in the league, even though he's an odd guy. The Denver thing is really about Westbrook and how that's fitting in. Apparently, it's fitting very well. And then, obviously, our 6-41 Wizards. But Norman Powell's had a hell of a year for the Clippers. I thought he was having an all-star-worthy season. But the Sixers, with Maxey, no matter how great he is, and he is great, Denton, I mean, their season just is a train wreck. So, all right, what else?
All right, how about the Caps in action yesterday? Alex Ovechkin did score his 876th goal. That's 18 away from tying Wayne Gretzky. Unfortunately, the Caps lost, though, in overtime 5-4 to the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, they get a point, though.
They get a point. something that we're going to have to talk about eventually, so we might as well talk about it now. How about Justin Tucker being accused of being Deshaun Watson in Baltimore, accused of inappropriate conduct with multiple massage therapists to the point he's been banned from multiple facilities around the Baltimore area, Kevin. And what's fascinating is this article came out. I had spoken to somebody that said we knew this article was coming out for about a week or so. But then you see a bunch of tweets dated from like 2001. I think I saw one from 2019, all saying kind of the same stuff. It just nobody really knew about it, but it does beg the question, what did Baltimore know that they allowed to continue over the course of years? Not a great situation for the Ravens.
Well, let's just mention first and foremost, like with all these situations, these are allegations, which he has denied emphatically. They are also allegations, by the way, from nearly 9 years ago, actually 9 to 13 years ago. The allegations reportedly occurred between 2012 and 2016. Not that that makes any difference. It's just, it was interesting when I was reading through the ESPN.com story that these are allegations from so long ago. Like, you know, part of me wonders, did he figure out after 2016 what the difference is between like a massage therapist and a massage therapist? I mean, dude, seriously. Clearly there's a problem. If these things are true, look, when you get six versus one or two, it just seems hard to believe from afar that there's not some truth to this, because there's a lot of smoke. It's six different massage therapists. What was it with Deshaun Watson? I think it was 23.
I think that number got up to 30.
It got up to 30?
Yeah, there was 23 associated with the lawsuit, but 30 total accusations. It's just some weren't involved in the lawsuit.
Yeah. Get it together, people. I was talking to Tommy about this on my podcast yesterday, and I thought that I was correct, and it turned out I was, that Justin Tucker is an operatic singer. I couldn't remember if it was him or somebody else, but he has like the most incredible voice. This has nothing to do with the allegations. I get it. I just, you know, I was reading through his, I pulled up his Wikipedia profile to see if that's who I was thinking of. Tucker's a devout Catholic and makes the sign of the cross before every kick. And Tucker is a classically trained bass baritone who can sing opera in seven different languages. He's been asked by both the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and the Opera Orchestra of New York for performances in the past. You've seen him sing, haven't you?
I have not. I'm going to guess I will have to go find old videos, because I don't know that he's going to be booking any gigs anytime soon.
He might not be booking any gigs anytime soon.
Did you see what your boy tweeted?
Who?
CTESPN, Antonio Brown.
What did he tweet?
It's a picture of Justin Tucker, Robert Kraft, and Deshaun Watson all hugging.
Yeah.
He didn't put a comment with the tweet, but I don't know that he needed a comment. I can read between those lines pretty easily.
Look, the behavior is terrible if it's true, and he'll be done if it's proven true. But you know, the Ravens have, let's see how they handle this one. They've got some experience in handling these situations. Obviously, the Ray Rice situation was a period of time in which they had to deal with this kind of player allegation, player charge, etc. So we'll see. He still, right, holds the record for the longest kick in NFL history at 66 yards. It bounced off the goalpost and over in a game against Dan Campbell in Detroit 3 years ago. And he struggled all year this year, but then got it together late season and in the postseason. Yeah. We'll see. But Tommy told me that the website, or maybe it's the paper, both.
Yeah, I think it's both.
Called The Banner.
Yeah.
Is like a big deal in Baltimore. I had never heard of it.
Had never you heard of it? No. I saw this come across my timeline, and I had to click on the Baltimore Band. And, you know, sometimes we see stories like this, and it's a publication that has like 2,000 followers, and I'm like, not that I want to discredit the publication, but it's a lot different if it's like the Washington Post versus the Denton Day Times, right? Like, that's just how it is. So I was like, is the Baltimore Banner like their version of the Denton Day Times? Like, what is this? And then I found out, oh, this is actually an esteemed publication. So I'd never heard of it before, but I also don't read up on Baltimore news.
The details of the allegations, I'm glad you held off reading them in detail.
Yeah, they're pretty tough. They're also kicked off air.
All right, we're done with news. I actually want to talk about something when we come back. Santana Moss is going to join us at 11:15. But we went through the season with the new kickoff rule. What were the results, and will it be approved again for next year? That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.